Well, hey, everyone, and welcome to the Ridge YA podcast. This is a podcast from Ridge Church, all about what it looks like to follow Jesus in the midst of the season that we're living in as a young adult. I'm Dan. I'm the pastor of youth and young adults here, and we want to welcome you to today's episode. On today's episode, we're talking to Jeff Stewart. He is the youth pastor at Peace Portal Alliance Church in South Surrey, and he's a good friend of mine. I've gotten to know him a bit over the last year, and he is one of the most fun people you will ever meet. So we wanted to ask him about it today. What does it look like to have fun as a part of our following Jesus? And how does that play into how we love our neighbor? And I don't mean generically, I mean like, how do you love your actual neighbor? It was such a fun conversation, and we can't wait for you to hear what he has to say. So let's hop right in. All right. Well, welcome, Jeff Stewart. It's so good to have you joining us on the YA podcast. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. I'm having a great day. How about you? How's things going over there?
Good, man. It's January right now, so it's the new year. 2021 is still feeling pretty crazy, but it's good. It's good. You are the youth pastor at Peace Portal Alliance Church, and you're joining us today from down in Surrey, right near the border.
That's right.
Would you share with us just a little bit of what does your world look like as you go into 2021? What's your life, family, work, all those kind of things? What's it look like for you right now?
Yeah. So for me, what's going on? Well, this is my 21st year of youth ministry here at this church. And so I've been here a long time. I don't feel old until I think about that. And so, I'm a full-time pastor here at the church. I'm married. I have a wife named LaVon. I have two kids named Jack and Winnie, and we have a cat named Puff Daddy. And, we live really close. Our whole world is kind of in this South Surrey community. So my wife, her office is, I can almost see it from out my window here at the office, and we live about 6 kilometers from here. So we're really close. It's like a 5-minute drive to the office. And so right now I'm working, raising kids. I'm doing ordination through my denomination. So that's a 2-year process. I'm also attending Regent College. So I'm doing my master's right now concurrently with my ordination. And when I'm not doing that, I'm usually restoring a travel trailer, which is usually like kind of something I do on the side for fun. So I like to restore trailers between like early 1950 would be the oldest one I currently have, up to 1963.
Yes. I've seen pictures. I haven't actually been to your backyard, but it has a name, right? It's Camp Tulip.
Camp Tulip. Yeah. So if you Google us, you'll find a little bit about us. We've created like our little oasis in the middle of our neighborhood. So it's, like a 1950s campsite. We have a trailer that's an office that we've sold the office trailer, and we've purchased a 30-foot 1951 Spartanet Tandem, which is a big silver trailer, looks like an Airstream, but better. And we're going to convert it into 2 offices. So I'll have one and my wife will have one. And then we're going to make office space for our kids to do art and do all that stuff. So we're just creating another room for our house.
Cool. That is, yeah, so cool. It's been so cool to follow along just on Instagram and seeing the pictures of like that forming over the last few years I've known you. And one of the things that I think has been cool about watching that for me is just like the value you've placed on creating beautiful spaces for people to connect. I know you've shared with me lots about having youth leaders over there from your team or those kind of things. And just as you've navigated, like even this last season, I wonder if you could speak to a little bit of how you've continued to kind of build those kind of creative projects and those kind of things in a way that's been beneficial for you. Because I think just as I've watched you and we've called a few times over the last year, when so many people seem to be discouraged, frustrated, ticked off, I've watched and heard as we've chatted, kind of an overwhelming sense of like creativity and joy in what you've done and whether that's your backyard or anything else you're working on. Can you maybe just speak to where that comes from?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I love the process. For me, part of the way I connect with God is through creating. He's a creator. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I get to make something, I feel like it's a way for me to worship God and use the gifts that I have. But for me, I don't like creating things that are just for myself. And so for me, it's either creating for my family or creating for my neighborhood. So the neighborhood we live in, I have a back alley behind my house. And so when we replaced our fence, for example, I intentionally put a fence that was only 4 feet high because I wanted to be able to talk to people. I wanted to be able to connect with my neighbors. So the fences on the back and one side of my house are replaced. We put lower fences so we could engage with people. We host events in our yard during non-COVID times. We put up a big outdoor movie screen. We've got 100 people in our backyard. And we don't live in like an acreage or anything. We live in a very normal little neighborhood. And so we've always wanted to say that our place is a place that people can come and connect. We want to make it unique and beautiful and fun. And Dan, it doesn't take more than about 2 minutes to realize my deep love of Walt Disney yes. and Disneyland. I've got my Carousel of Progress there. I've got my Space Mountain coffee mug right here. There's Mickey ears right here, never far away. And so I really resonate with like Walt Disney and his mm-hmm. idea of creating Disneyland as a place for people to connect, as a clean place for families to connect. And so yeah. for me, my like enjoyment of him and like his ethos on design led to like my son is Jack, named after my grandfather, Big Jack, and then Jack Elias, named after Walter Elias Disney. So I named my son after Walt Disney because I want my son to create things for people. I want to use the things we have. So not going into COVID, we didn't realize that we were going to do a big renovation on our house, not knowing there was a pandemic coming. And so we created an 800 square foot covered outdoor space off the back of our house with heaters mm-hmm. and TV and a big cedar strip canoe that's a light over an almost 12 foot long table for people to connect at. And so we wanted to build a big table that there was always extra room at. And I thought about when I was a kid, like my parents were, they would always say you could have people over, but like in reality, having people over was a total hassle because they always had exactly enough food for my brother and I and them. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't make more food than we needed at the time. Sure. And so actually having people over was said to be a good thing, but in reality it was inconvenience to them. Mm. And I want to make it, I want people, our house to be a place that people could drop in. Mm. So during COVID, when we were allowed to gather, we would have people come, people would host their small groups on our deck. A village church would come, they hosted their youth leader appreciation things in our backyard. Mm. It's not like, this is a space that's for other people. We've had weddings in our yard. We've had, you know, we're having people who want to meet with their family because it's the only covered space that was available. Yeah. And so we just said, whatever is ours is available to other people. Nothing we have, nothing we own owns us. Mm. And so what does it mean for us to make spaces, make places, and memorable spaces, for other people to connect. And so that's been like the ethos from the word go. And we want to be that house in the neighborhood where people come, like during the pandemic, when everyone was at home, especially in the first part, I'm out in the backyard and people are like, oh, I love your yard. Like, tell me about it. And I'm like, oh, I'm able to share with them about my life, share with them mm. about my work, share with them, like begin faith conversations right. because I'm creating something that's interesting and compelling, mm. but that I'm not, it's not just for me. It's not a, hey, don't look at this. It's mine. It's right. Hey, I made this beautiful thing, but I want you to be able to enjoy it too.
Mm-hmm. Can you like expand a little bit on that? Cause I think it's really interesting. When we think about evangelism or when we think about faith conversations or we think about those kind of things, like at least in my kind of upbringing, starting out as a Christian, it was like, that's an activity that you do. And so mm-hmm. what you're sharing sounds like pretty like just feet on the ground life with like, not like some prototypical idea of neighbors of like, here's what Jesus actually means when he says neighbors, but like, no, your actual literal neighbors.
Yeah.
How do you kind of process and get to the point where that's a value for you that like you're actually seeing your backyard as an opportunity and a mission field almost, it seems like to me, that can be used not just for you, not just for your church, not just for, cause I think we all want like those cool spaces. We see those like Instagrammable spaces. When I scroll through and like look at like design trends and those kind of things, but mm-hmm. what gets you and your family to the point where you would say, you just said it, it's not ours. It's ours to share.
Yeah. I think for us, we've always seen our neighborhood as like our prime missions field, mm-hmm. but also like I live in a neighborhood, like I think it might be different, maybe not different. The unique thing about my neighborhood is that it's being gentrified. So that mm-hmm. means that it's an older neighborhood where there's people who lived there for 40 or 50 years. And then there's new families like us. We've been there 7 years, but there's new houses getting built. There's older people who are struggling, older people that like, you know, bought a house for $30,000 that's now not worth $30,000. And so we said, what does it mean for us to serve these folks and like make sure that we see that our job is to take care of them? So the first step we did was we said, well, let's adopt our street. So in the city, I live in Surrey, so you can adopt your street. Yeah. And so we adopted a 1 kilometer radius around like our street, the two alleys behind it, and the streets that bookend our street. We live in an area called, I live on Tulip Drive, Camp Tulip, and we're in an area called the Flower Street. So Lilac, Flower Street is literally called Flower Street, and Tulips, there's three Flower Streets. And then Macbeth is behind us. And so this is kind of this weird little box or rectangle streets. So we adopted our street. So what that meant was every 2 weeks, my family and I walk around with our garbage tongs and our bags and our vests provided by the city. And we pick up garbage and cigarette butts, and we try and make our city more beautiful. At the end of the street, at top of the bottom of the street, it says this street is adopted by Camp Tulip. So it's our family's, our like little house name is on the end of it. We realize there's lots of people in the neighborhood with dogs. So what we did was we put behind our fence in the alley, poop bags, a little a thing full of biscuits for their dogs. And I bought a 100-year-old fire hydrant. And I put it out with a sign that said, welcome dogs. And there's a garbage can for them to dump their poop in. So we made a full service dog station. We don't have a dog. I don't want a dog. Dogs are great, but they're a ton of work. But I'm happy to serve people with dogs. And so what happened was, is that people would start to come over because their dogs like coming to our house. And twice now, two dogs have run away from home, like got lost, and they came to our house. And so we, they came in and we scooped them into the backyard, and then we called their owners. One of them, we called the, had to call the city of Surrey to come pick up the dog. But then the owner saw the animal control vehicle coming and came pick the dog up. But we've wanted to be the place that just like unabashedly at our own cost serves our neighbors.
Right.
And so if that means that like, my neighbor Sid is very old. I mow my neighbor Sid's lawn for him. I take care of him. I climb up on his roof because he's my neighbor. God somehow put us together, right? We chose this house. And so in that, we were blessed with Sid, our neighbor. And so for us, it's like, these are the people that geographically live close to us. These are people that, you know, have lives, that have struggles, that I've got the time to stand at the back fence with my arm on there and check in with these people. No agenda, no just waiting for me to just like shoot the gospel at them, but actually treat them like human beings and elevate what it means to be a neighbor. And so I really feel like God's given me a really clear call to like create a space that's compelling, make it shareable that people can come. And when the pandemic's over, we'll back to hosting events, back to hosting, you know, movies in the yard, and invite our neighbors to it. And if they can't have that space, they don't know how to create it, well, they can come use ours. And so like, we've now installed like a fully immersive sound system, like at Disneyland. So there's, I think 12 or 14 speakers in my backyard, all hidden. So when music comes on, it's like 360, but you don't know where it's coming from. It's all hidden and waterproof. And so we just love, nothing I own owns me. And so everything I have, God gave me, and I'm very happy to give it away to somebody else if they need it.
That's cool. That's amazing. Can you even just go a little more on, I think we all love the idea of doing that, but a lot of times what I find is like my wife and I live in a basement suite and we live on a quiet street. And a lot of times it's almost a question of how do we do that? How do we think creatively about how to love our neighborhood? How do we do this? Or how do, and as I think about a lot of young adults, there's a lot of like, well, I don't have a space. Well, I don't have this. Well, here's what I do have. Well, how could I ever do that? Or anything like that. How do you think creatively to make that kind of a part of, you use the word ethos, of what you do for your neighborhood, when maybe there's a sense in which many young adults, myself included, often look at our neighborhoods and say, I want to love this neighborhood, I want to care for this neighborhood, but I don't know where to start.
Yeah. I think like, honestly, the place that it starts with almost all these people is it started with a wave and a hello. And it starts with those things. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience of like you're driving your car and slowly through your neighborhood, you wave at somebody and they just look at you, go by, like glaring at you. I find it so puzzling. And so for me, it starts with just building a rapport with people, letting them know you're there. So if they're walking by, say, hey, how are you? Good to see you. And then you know, you see them again, say, hey, do you live close by? Oh, that's great. You live down the street. And so, there's a couple of guys, Wayne and Arturo, that live a couple streets over. And like, we have slowly built a relationship with them. and started to get to know them. And there's another guy whose name I don't know. I just call him a pot smoker because he, like, every time he comes by, he's always just ripping. He's always smoking weed when we're chatting, which is fine. It's always a fun conversation with this guy. But like, he always has a million questions for me mm-hmm. about what we're up to, what we're building, all this stuff. And mm-hmm. so like every one of these people has hopes and dreams. Every one of these people has a call in their life. Every one of these people has a story. And so for me to even, I consider it a real gift that someone would even open up a little bit about their life, about what they do, about their family, how they spend the holidays, all those things. And so I think being a consistent face and being available and being outside. So like, if you live in a basement, for example, are you strategically going out and saying, we're going to go for a walk on Saturday mornings, or we're going to go for a walk when we get home from work. And we know that, like, my wife has a little thing in her phone. As we meet neighbors, we just write down their address and what their names are. And so then I know, okay, that person's quite elderly. Hmm. And I know it snowed last night, or it's going to snow tonight. So it's like, okay, what does it mean for me to be able to go over and, like, I'm going to go shovel Sid and Bev's driveway, or, you know, it's on garbage day. I know that I'll see the bins out. What does it mean for me just to go over there and drag their bins to the side of their house for them? Like, yeah. They don't have to ask you to do these things. You can do these things and not look at them to applaud you, not look mm-hmm. at them to do anything, mm-hmm. but actually out of, like, genuine care for them. And so mm-hmm. I think there's people that are near you that have simple needs that can be met that you could really easily do. That just involve a little bit of, like, thoughtfulness on your behalf. Right. And also I think a little bit of boldness to say, they're not going to ask me if I go to their door and say, do you want me to shovel your driveway? As opposed to just going over and shoveling it and then carrying on. Even if they never know it was you, who cares? Mm-hmm. No one needs to know it was you, despite what social media tells you. Right. Nobody needs to know it was you.
No, that's so good. And that's such a place to start. Cause I think, yeah, oftentimes, like, you hear a story, like what you're sharing about your backyard. And I think it's really easy to go, well, I could never do that. I could never get to that point. I could never make that kind of space, or I don't know my neighbors. I've lived here forever and I just don't know these people, or I don't go for whatever it may be. But like, even just what you're saying of the smallest action can actually make a really big impact, or just a little impact, right? I think that's, you mentioned like having the names and addresses of the people you live around. I remember growing up, we had this thing on our fridge where it's like, here's our whole street, because everybody knew each other, of like, yeah. Here's the names, here's the kids' names, here's the phone number if anything comes up. And now, like, I couldn't tell you like the name or what anybody or a lot of people on my street do. So I think that's convicting me in a really good way. So thank you for sharing about that.
And just, but Dan, you have to know there's going to be people that don't like you. There's going to be people that don't like anybody.
Yeah.
My original neighbor on my one side, mm-hmm. like, hated everybody. Every time I made a noise, he'd yell at me. Mm-hmm. But at the same time is like, when every time there was an opportunity to serve him, I tried to take it, even though I knew the guy didn't like me. Mm-hmm. So when he went to move at the end, when he moved out, I was like helping him move his wood pile because he was older. Mm-hmm. And he was a hard man. Like, he was just a really hardened dude without a very challenging life. Mm-hmm. And so for me to have, look at him, even someone that's like not a kind person, that doesn't have decorum or, you know, I think the ability to even engage in it with any sort of kindness,
right,
doesn't exclude me from returning to them that which they didn't give to me.
Sure. Sure.
Right. And I think, what did someone say? Like, the mark of someone that has a servant heart is when you serve people that can do nothing for you in return. Right.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm not trying to make it with any of these people, I'm not trying to get them to pay me to shovel the driveway. Right. I don't want them to do anything because I don't, right. They shouldn't. But I want my neighbor Peggy, who has an ambulance show up at her house every probably 2 to 3 weeks because she has breathing problems. Hmm. I want her to know that when I see the ambulance, I'm going to walk over and check on her, and then I'm going to follow up with her and we're going to call her.
Yeah.
Peggy can't do anything for us. She has no ability to do it. Hmm. But that doesn't preclude me from serving her, giving her dignity, reminding that she's valued and cared for by people, including us.
Yeah. 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 No, that's so good. I think you hit a little bit on too, like this idea of the hope of faith conversations and the hope of an opportunity to share the gospel, but that it's not kind of a bait and switch idea of serving. And I think a lot of times when we look at serving or we look at evangelism, we look at loving our neighbors, there's a bit of a dichotomy that says like, I'll love you so that I can get you to believe this or convert you or that kind of thing. And can you just maybe like speak on that? Cause that kind of feels like a tension, even in my heart sometimes as I interact with people where it's a little bit built in. I want this person to know Jesus. I want this person like to experience the power of the gospel. But at the same time, what does it mean to kind of love without, like you're saying, without expecting this person to give you anything back, including a, you know, a conversion or whatever it may be?
Yeah. Well, I've been haunted by a tweet I saw probably like a couple months ago, and it was really simple. It said, and this is like in light of a lot of like evangelical kind of drama in the US right now. Mm-hmm. This lady tweeted, said, question, are you a Christian? And she said, answer, ask my neighbor. Is that I can be really good at pretend like being a Christian. I'm a professional Christian. I work at a church. I can be really good at being a Sunday Christian. If you want to know if I'm a Christian, ask the people that live beside me 7 days a week. Wow. Ask the people that I share a fence with. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that will confirm for you whether or not my Christian faith is real, transformative, and actually has changed any part of me. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they would say yes, because I hope they would say that through meekness, through kindness, through gentle care for people, without agenda, without any sort of like caveat or strings attached to me caring for them. It's out of a deep love and a deep value of seeing the value that God placed on them and living that out through caring for them as my neighbors. And ultimately through faithfulness over that time, these faith conversations are happening. That people know it doesn't take long for someone to know you work at a church. It doesn't take long for them to know what you're up to. It doesn't take long for them to be like, oh, why are there 40 young adults in your backyard tonight? I said, oh, these are all the volunteers in our youth ministry.
Right.
It doesn't take long for them to see for us, like, we do a big fundraiser at Christmas time after Christmas, where we pick up Christmas trees. So like every day I've got a Christmas tree attached to the roof of my car right now. Yeah. And so for them to say, what's that all about? Oh, like my new neighbor across the street just moved in. And I was like, hey, our youth group does this thing. I'll take your Christmas tree for you. Just I'll take it and throw it in the trailer. They're like, oh, we did to pay. I said, no, this one's on us. Don't worry about it. You're already right here. Yeah. And they said, you guys do a trip. I tell them about what it is. I tell them about our youth ministry. I tell them about being a pastor. Right. And it doesn't always have to be, do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ?
Right.
Because those conversations inevitably happen, but you get there eventually, and you get there through trust. You get there through relationship. And that when you see them as people and not projects, classic, your authenticity and your life with Christ personified through your life adds validity to your words. But if you're someone that's like a jerk of a neighbor that's rude to everybody, that like, you know, complains about your neighbors to the city, all does all these things, and then you try and tell them about the hope that you have in Jesus, those words are going to land so flat. Right. And that I hope that we're investing in the conversations that we'll have and that we're having by being consistent. We've been there 7 years. And so loving people long-term and accepting them and all their faults. And when they swear in front of me and then apologize to me, you don't apologize to me about anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think to not be judgmental and love people right where they're at is, and authentically love them. Like not just like, I don't know. I think it's really easy to fake it, but like actually genuinely love for them and pray for them.
Yeah, no, that's good. I love what you mentioned too about the long game. I remember you said this thing to me when I first started here at Ridge Church and had moved from another town and all those kind of things, and was talking to you just about feeling overwhelmed and what am I doing and all those kind of things. And you said this great statement to me that's kind of stuck with me for the last year, where you said, stick in there, it gets good around year seven.
Yeah, it does.
And that's, I think, true of youth ministry. I mean, I've yet to experience that. I'm a year and a half in here. But it's got me thinking a lot about what does it mean to play the long game? Not just in work or ministry, if that's your kind of path in terms of career, but in terms of just like loving and living in a place, in a community, in a church, and whatever it might look like. Can you speak a little to that idea of why playing the long game matters? Because so many of us, it feels really easy to just, and I don't even mean just churches, I mean in general, I'm just going to go where it's comfortable. I'm going to go where it's simple right now. I'm going to move here, do this, that kind of thing. And many young adults being transient and moving around, that's a very normal thing of figuring out your life. But can you speak to maybe why at some point to choose to stick it out over the long haul somewhere, whether it's a church or community or, you know, a neighborhood, why that matters?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a good question, because when I think about, like, for my wife and I, we're pretty stable. My wife's been at her job for 11 years. Sure. I've been on staff for 11 years. I was a volunteer for 10. So this is my 21st year youth ministry. I've been at this church since I was 18. Since I was 17 and I turned 39. I'm 38, turned 39 this year. I've been here a long time.
Right.
You know, we've only lived in two houses in the last decade. And so for us, like, we've had basically the same friends for 10 to 20 years. Hmm. And when I think about, like, things in my life, the longer I commit to them and the longer I'm committed and the more committed I am, the better they get. I think my marriage is as strong or stronger than it's ever been, because we're in a great season where we're, like, doing maintenance on our relationship. We're checking in, we're working hard, but over time you build trust. So mm-hmm. if you're in a community, your trust level as a leader, if you're going to be a leader, your trust level with people to be able to make changes, like, people, when they trust me as the youth pastor, which is good. It means that when we're going to make a decision, we're going to cancel something, they're not wondering what the motivations are.
Right.
And for you as if you're working at a job and you're climbing up the ladder and you're working there, it doesn't mean you have to stay at a dead end job forever, but it's possible, that, like, over time as an employer or as a boss, like, your ability, if you've been there long-term, for people to trust you, that's a good thing. And when you're invested long-term, you have deep, deep relationships that people know you through all seasons. Mm-hmm. And I think when we're truly known and we're truly able to be ourselves, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and people are able to accept that, I think it invites for us a sense of freedom that we don't need to pretend. When we bounce around, and admittedly, at college age, you might be away for school, or you might just be like, hey, I need to figure out who I am outside of my family. I get all of those things. But to understand that it takes a long time for people to get to know who you are,
right.
And it's really easy to pretend to be someone you're not. And so everyone's complaining about wearing masks these days, but yeah. I'm not, I like them, but we've been wearing masks forever. And they're just the masks are the things we pretend to be, the people we pretend to be,
right.
the social media persona we put on, all the things that we kind of act like and pretend that we are. I think to find a place that you can invest in long-term mm-hmm. where you don't need to be anyone but who you are and who God's called you to be, and to lean into your unique giftings, where you don't feel like, man, I'm going to a one size fits or a church that's like one type of person, or I'm in a community that expects me to act a certain or like kind of be a certain way, think a certain way, dress a certain way. I think you're missing out on the fullness of what God has for you, which is why, like, my church is like, it's interesting. It's got like a vibrant youth ministry, vibrant young adults ministry, but it's multi-generational. There's like 100-year-old people, and we try and get people mixing from all places. And right. so it's easy to want to go where, like, everything's how you prefer it, but actually there's something beautiful about staying with something and investing in it and shaping it and seeing the beauty in all seasons and all types of people that you get to rub shoulders with at church, at work, all those things.
That's good. No, that's so good. You spoke a little bit to, like, unique gifting and kind of living that out. And one of the things that stuck out to me the first time I met you, I came down for a conference with Colby, who was my mentor at the time. And he was like, hey, we're leaving at lunch break. We're going to hang out with my buddy Jeff. And so we went and got lunch with you. And I remember being blown away by how much fun you were. And I was really young at the time. I think I was 19, maybe 20 years old, just getting started in ministry. And I had a picture in my head of, this is what a, like, ministry leader is supposed to look like. Serious, you know, always, like, talking about only spiritual things, always talking about the Bible and those kind of things. And I remember walking away from that and kind of thinking, man, this guy is so much fun and he's a pastor. I didn't know you could do both of those things. And one of the things as we've interacted and stuff is I've got to hear about, you mentioned your grad trip that you guys do to Disneyland with your youth ministry. Got to watch your Christmas lights that you did through this season, and you guys go look at Jeff's Instagram and just see, like, the lights for Christmas this year were just next level. One of the things I think you bring in a really beautiful way is this kind of value of fun into following Jesus, and I'm wondering if you could speak to that, and maybe just, yeah, speak to, what does it mean to have fun, to hold that as something that's a part of our following Jesus, not separate from our following Jesus?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that is a big ethos for me at our youth ministry, and I think it should be probably for anybody that's a Christ follower, is to show people that a life of following Jesus is it's not boring, it's not unfulfilling, and it certainly doesn't lack fun and creativity. Yeah. And so for me, like, I spend time alone with God, praying, worshiping, having those moments, but oftentimes I'll have my earbuds in and I'll be out in my shed building something, and I'll be worshiping God in the midst of it.
Right.
And for me, showing young people that you can follow Jesus and not have to feel the pressure to, like, I might have a beer. I don't know what your church's policy are. I might have a beer once a month, once or twice. I don't really care for it. It's never been a part of my life. Right. And so that's never been something that I've needed to have fun, to be social.
Yep.
It's never been a part of my life that way. And so for me to be able to show people a life that is abundant, a life that is full, a life that is fun, that is engaging, and on a very real way, is like, man, I can be very serious. I can be. We can go there, but I don't think we always need to. And like, praise God that He did not call me to be a monk. He did not call me to be like a priest. Like, I guess I'm a priest, but like, you know, I'm not working at the Vatican. I'm not out by myself. Mm-hmm. Like, being working at a monastery or something like that. Like, that would just not be for me. God's really gifted me with a desire to to create, to be fun, and to invite other people in. So for me in youth ministry, like, we take our grads every year to Disneyland. It's like the crescendo, their last thing they do with us is that trip. And so for us, it's like, we always are building towards that. And the whole world is trying to tell young people to grow up. And I think for us to create spaces and environments where young people can just be kids and have fun.
Yeah.
And for me, like, even on that trip, that moment where we land there, we drive to Huntington Beach, and our students run out into the ocean. It's just this glimpse for me of how God must delight watching us play in His creation, how He must delight when He sees us just genuinely enjoying that which He's given us. Mm-hmm. And so for me to like create spaces where I get to see students having fun, to use humor, to not feel like the pressure to be somebody, to be, to act a certain way, mm-hmm. but actually they can just be okay with who they are, be okay with, how God's wired them and made them, and like really lean into it. And so for me, having fun, man, life is, we get one shot at this thing, and I just want to make it fun and enjoyable and like bring joy to people. And I hope that like, after you and I have a conversation, I'm very happy to hear that you and I went to Taco Fino, didn't we?
Yeah. Taco Fino. That was the one. And my first time.
Yeah. And then we went to that really pretentious coffee shop, I think, on the way back.
I love it.
I don't drink coffee, so I was really bored there. I just want to be honest with you. But I remember meeting up with you guys, Taco Fino in Yaletown. Mm-hmm. But that's the person I am with my kids. That's the person I am with my neighbors. I'm the guy that's just like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it. I just want to jump in and like, but I want to see people like using their gifts. I want to see people doing those things. So for me, man, following Jesus is a deep love of God, but also like for me, a very real recognition of like how He's made me, how He's wired me, and that He's really given me a passion to share that with other people in like really hopefully compelling and fun ways.
Yeah. We're running short on time here, but one question I just want to ask you, as you're breaking down kind of your unique giftings of caring about fun and creativity and those kind of things, how would you encourage someone who maybe is hearing this and going, well, I want to live out my unique giftings, but I have no idea what they are because I don't feel confident in front of people, or I don't feel like I'm a ball of energy, and I don't have the, you know, creative spark or whatever it may be. What would you say to someone who's maybe trying to discover and figure out what is my unique gifting and how God's gifted me to function as a neighbor, as a person in my church, as a person in a ministry, whatever it might look like?
Yeah. Okay. A couple of things I would say. I think the easiest way to find out what your giftings are is actually to ask three or four people that you know really well and say, hey, what are five things you think that I'm like uniquely gifted at?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the only person in the world that can do that, but they might say, man, you're an unbelievable listener. Man, you are so faith-filled. Like, anytime there's trouble, I just sense like you're just hopeful in that. They might say, man, you're so good with people. I mean, increasingly I'm watching that when I notice students that can talk on the phone, that have strong interpersonal skills, that can have a conversation, that can do those things. I'm like, man, those your skills that in the future are going to be so valuable. Ask four or five people you know to say, hey, I'm not trying to get you to pump up my tires, but I kind of am. I just would love to know. You've got more maybe objectivity in my own life. That's a good way to do it. If you're like in that spot where maybe you haven't started university, you're like, I have no clue what I'm going to do. Yep. I have too many options. I have analysis paralysis. I would strongly suggest that you try and do something like either see a career counselor or something. Do something called the Berkman, B-I-R-K-M-A-N. You might think, man, it's a lot of money. It's like $750 to do a Berkman. But if you think in the grand scheme of your life, to be able to have like do a breakdown with someone to say, here's what people who are wired like you like to do,
yep,
that would point you in a direction, $650 is nothing. Mm-hmm. That's less than the cost of a class at Kwantlen.
Right.
So for you, or $750, invest in doing some sort of like personality in-depth profile that analyzes your giftings, your passions, the way that God's wired you and says, here's what people historically who are just like you like doing. Hmm. And so to help you find some direction, because I was like that too. When I was in high school, I wanted to be a police officer. I have a Bachelor of Science in Geography. I was going to be a high school teacher. And now look at me, I'm a youth pastor. And so I think there's people, it's intimidating when you're around people that know exactly what they want to do and when they want to do it. Yep. But to you to be okay with like, this is the lane that God has put me in. These are the giftings. But if you need help finding them out, ask people that are close to you. The next step would be do a personality profile, get to see a career counselor and have someone say, do some tests, figure out what you're like, and then start pointing you in the right direction. Because I think from that, you can say, man, I can use my giftings in these ways. Because you're like, man, I try and be hospitable, but like, right, I'm not hospitable. It's weird. People think I'm very, hospitality is my gift. My wife and I hate cooking. We hate it. We're terrible at it. So we've always like been hung up on being hospitable until we created a space for people to gather in. Mm. Then we could be hospitable. Then we could just say, you show up and you bring your own food and we'll hang out in the yard.
Right.
And so we've just figured out, man, we love being hospitable. We hate cooking. There's got to be a way to figure it out. And we figured it out.
Right. That's cool. No, that's amazing. Cool. Well, we are just about out of time, but would you leave us with any last words or encouragements as we kind of go into 2021, go into a year that still kind of holds so many unknowns as we seek to kind of follow Jesus, to live out what it means to love our neighbor. Any last words of encouragement as we close out here?
Yeah. What I would say is I'm pretty guilty of being on my phone a lot. I have like 34,000 photos on my phone. And two things I would tell you to do, I would suggest you to do. One, put your phone down and go look around. There's so many amazing things going on. There's good things happening. Mm-hmm. There are great people around you that want your time, that would rather know the color of your eyes than the color of your phone. So for you to have conversations with people and engage with them, the world is better than we realize. God is up to some cool stuff. And so just find ways to slow your life down, to see the good around and to share it, share things you see that are beautiful, share things you see that are fun, create things that are beautiful, create things that are fun. And if you can't create them, find people that are and celebrate them, and celebrate them as someone that's a created being that's doing cool things. And my only hack I want to share with you, this is really life-changing. It's totally unrelated to this, but it's not. On your iPhone, you can set your home screen up where you have no apps on it, so that you don't have to like have the crazy busy app nonsense. You can have it just so you have your main screen has nothing on it. So you just, that's the Disneyland castle, of course. But set yourself up in ways that you're not just like staring at your phone all the time. Set up your home screen so that it's calm, that you're be able to do those things and be able to have a conversation with someone. Yeah. And I sincerely believe if you ask God to say, God, help me slow down, open my eyes to the needs around me, open my eyes to people around me that need my help, he will reveal them to you. But you just got to pay attention. Every time I've done that, God has just blown me away with the neighbors around me. Because in the Good Samaritan story, who is the neighbor? The neighbor was someone that was in need. Yeah. And so there's people around you that were in need. There's people around you right now that are in need. And that for you, that God can show you who those people are. He wants to.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jeff. Thank you for taking the time. It's been such a joy. Awesome. Yeah, man. Thanks for being here. We've loved having the conversation. And thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Bless you guys.